F T T W 2. All right, they got us. 2 T W I twin Moores brothers. We have here the twin Moore brothers tonight, Frank and Leroy.
Right, straight from the Bay Area. Only in the crazy Bay Area.
We F O we found E each other at the let's see, Romancing the Muse at the San Francisco Public Library last month. That's where they discovered each other.
Yeah.
They K N knew I M R E A really black. That's why they booked you.
It's so funny that I was looking at the outline. I was like, oh my God, who is this Frank Moore? They're like, who is he? I called Darlene Roberts. I was like, who is Frank Moore? Where does he live? So Darlene told me all about you. It's like, oh, I gotta meet this one. Mom didn't tell me about this one.
I was be blown out by that event. We were blown out by you, by everybody. It was the best reading we had ever gone to.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. It was really good. I mean, everybody was on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That event was really, I mean, we had some extraordinary poets.
Yes.
Yeah. And it needs to happen again and again and again and again. It's really wonderful. I mean, disabled poets are really...
I have booked everybody for the show.
Yeah.
Frank's no fool.
Can you come on? How about you? I'm passing That's out your car like a lawyer. There you go.
That's right. L E E Lee Williams has been on this show before. Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. I just saw him today. Integrated Arts Organization for Artists and Poets of Disability.
Yes. How you met Lee? It was back in the, I guess the 80s, the middle 80s, early 80s, something like that. I think, he just got in his wheelchair maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not sure, but we think. And Frank used to cruise around, around campus on his motor chair. He could drive himself. And he'd go with a sign on his board to get people to video and whatever. Yeah. I was doing a series at UC Berkeley at the time, a performance art series twice a month.
Oh, yeah?
So he was...
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Did that for a little over 3 years.
God.
I and Lee was... drawing the arch or something about the campus, the Sather Gate thing there. He was sitting there drawing, and Frank went up to him and started talking to him.
He said, who are you?
He, T, H, he thought he could not be a artist did any anymore.
Oh yeah, because after his accident.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He has one piece that he talks about his accident.
He has a piece where he talks about his accident.
Yeah, like an introduction, yeah.
Yes. And, but, A, but if I, oh, if you can, A, no, T, A, talent, if you and no talent can do art, and then why couldn't Lee?
Mm.
So, he, S, A, he said, it, O, opened, P, possibilities for him that day, having that conversation with Frank.
Yeah. I'm telling you, you might have changed his life.
Yes.
Yeah. Started into his career that he's doing now.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a wonderful singer, poet, I mean, everything.
Yeah.
Like wrapped up in one.
Yeah. But A, J, I, J, O, C, but a jock.
A jock, yeah. Big time jock. Big time jock. Every time I see him, he has medals everywhere, hanging out his chest, his wheelchair, and it's like, oh my God. Big time. It's funny, I used to do some sports when I was in my teens, and now I see Lee Williams, it's like, God, why did I give it up, you know? If this man can do it, you know, I definitely can do it. But
how, what, why did you, G, go to E-N. Why did you go to England?
Oh my God, Frank. I went to England. I went to England in 95. That's when I graduated from college. And I was sick and tired of disabled movement here. So
why? Why were you sick and tired of it?
Well, because after, God, 14 years of being involved in it, and not seeing me in it. I do a lot of research on race and disability. And not seeing it well diverse with all people of color, that really turned me off. And not seeing it really taking on issues in a progressive, radical way. So
that they N never liked me.
And never liked you.
Right from the beginning. Frank moved to the Bay Area in 75. Mm. And he didn't have, like, an attendant. He would have his friends were the ones that took care of, you know, the physical stuff he needed. Mm. And that was at a time when it was, like, very uncool that you had to be independent and have to hire somebody. And he said it only deepens the relationship to have a friend be involved on that level. So they didn't like him for that. And we found out over the years the reason they don't like him changes with kind of fashion. And then at a certain point it seemed like people started thinking in terms that it was okay to have friends be your attendants.
Mm-hmm.
But then they still didn't like Frank. I don't remember why they didn't like you then.
Mm-hmm.
O, obviously, OB, R, the Outrageous Beauty Review, that it was like on PC or something. Frank directed a show in the late 70s called The Outrageous Beauty Review that got like a lot of press. We ran for 3.5 years in San Francisco at the Punk Club.
The Punk Club.
And it was, world known. It was in all the magazines, all like Playboy and Hustler, all the skin, because there was a lot of nudity. But like the cast was made up of men, women, Crips, non-Crips, but the Crips just kind of were regular cast people. There was no kind of, they weren't like being Crips.
Yeah.
So like we did an act like Macho Man by the Village People, but it was all people in wheelchairs and a woman. And they were all dressed up in the costumes and stuff. And, a lot of very un-PC things. The one act, Devo, was a guy, real sexy CP guy that wasn't, like, that could walk around and move and everything. Like you. Yeah, you remind us of him.
Yeah.
And he would play a guy going into the nurse's doctor in his wheelchair, and the nurse would come out, and he'd get, like, really nervous, and there's, like, this Muzak playing, and he'd be like, he wants to get out, like, what's going on? And all of a sudden, the Muzak changes to the Devo song, dan, 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 dan. The nurse goes berserk, takes all her clothes off, and all she has on is, like, a G-string and all this spike jewelry, and she starts torturing him. Like she takes a urine can and acts like she's peeing in it, and then she like throws it on him. She'll take an enema and acts like she's filling that up, and then it was like very uncool to torture a Crip, in 1978. But
I love it.
But then he ends up attacking her and gets her pinned on the ground and is humping her and. Just like, and that's the act, yeah.
And what year was this?
It started in 78 and it ran 3.5 years. We did it like twice a week for a while, and it was the Saturday night early show, and then the punk bands would play after us.
Was it here in Berkeley? Or?
San Francisco. It was called the Fab Mab. It was like, the kind of punk place. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And how did the people react? Many people were like, this freaked them out.
At first, they, T-H, thought the Crips. Oh, that's like, right, in terms of that, yeah. Well, people went through a lot of changes about the Crip stuff. Mm-hmm. And so at first, like with the whole Macho Man thing and this Devo act, first they thought that they were able-bodied people making fun of Crips. And then when they find out that the people are really Crips, they said that they're being exploited by somebody. And then when they find out that the Crips are the ones who's doing the show, and then I was the G, the F, U, fucking director. And then they said that they were exploiting their own bodies.
upset people. Jesus. Oh, my God. That's the thing that I saw in England. It blew me away. I was like, wow, disabled theater, X-rated stuff, disabled newspapers on, like, mainstream newspaper stands. I was like, this is it. It was, like, straight in your face.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What kind of X-rated stuff?
Oh, in one theater, I think it's called the Grace of Grass Theater. and I saw a play. It's a theater for actors with disabilities, and I saw a play, and it had nudity, it had S&M in it, and it was like, I was like, boing, you know, you could never see this in the U.S. And it was like straight there, just blew me away.
Yes. B. E. Because in the U.S., the Crips, B. U. By the G. Good, the good Crip image.
Yeah, that point. You know, be good, be quiet, don't make one. Did you see on this colony show called In Living Color?
In Living Color,
yes. And when Handyman came out, oh my God. People freaked out. I loved it. I think what the character said that he received a lot of letters from the disabled community just freaking out about him playing this disabled hero. And
you, if we can not be, or if we cannot be human, why bother?
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're too serious, you know, about disability. I mean, way too serious. I think people have a hard time laughing at making fun of their own self when they're disabled.
I never get C.R. Crip at the events. Frank's been doing his art for like 30 years, and Crips never show up for even though, like, it's kind of what has happened sometimes is, like, people from a city will hear that he's coming, and he's, you know, he's kind of well known in the art community, so they'll get excited that this disabled artist is coming.
Yeah.
And they'll start like wanting, oh, well, I think we're going to, you know, kind of pass the word around in disabled community, and people will show up. But the more they find out about Frank's art, and then they kind of don't want to have anything to do with it, because it's not about being a Crip. It's just about being a person. And that seems like then he's not kind of a poster boy anymore.
Oh, wow. That's interesting, because I get almost the same thing, because I do lectures on race and disability. And once, it's funny, one time we were doing a lecture at this high school, and the students loved it. You know, the students loved it. The students were into it.
Always.
The teachers were blown away. You know, it's like, hello, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you get that reputation, it's hard, you know.
Yeah, fairy tales. Frank made a video called Fairy Tales Can Come True. It's like a little 35-minute thing that about a guy who's disabled that Frank plays, a college-age guy, and who thinks he's ugly. You know, big lips, big teeth, girls, I drool, nobody's ever going to want me. And there's a, you know, a cute co-ed gal that's been hanging out with him who has a jock boyfriend that's like, you know, totally insensitive. Like, you know, just the ultimate of like a jerk. And Frank's character, of course, doesn't even see that she likes him because he has such a bad self-image.
Yeah.
And his fairy godfather pops up, who's also this crip, R.E. English. Yeah, played by a guy named Barry, who was part of Frank's, like, you know, community of theater group. And he real funny, dirty, raunchy guy, naturally. So Frank didn't give him any lines. He said, this is what we want to achieve in this scene. And they just roll the camera because he was so funny.
Really?
And he was like, oh, I don't want to be your fairy godfather anymore. You're so boring. You never get the girl. Who wants to be your fairy godfather? So he kind of like talks Frank's character through this thing where he kind of does magic. You know, he changes his clothes and shaves his beard and cuts his hair. So he's, you know, he says, now, okay, do you believe me? And anyway, make a long story short, Frank's character gets the girl in the end.
Yes.
And the film ends with them, you know, an erotic scene with the two of them nude in bed. Well, when we showed it at, well, first of all, it was distributed by, a distributor picked it up right away. And
no
we
way.
Made it for $300 on Super 8 film.
Get the fuck up.
You thought you were making it to get money to make the real version. But when we showed it around, this distributor said, oh, no, we'll take it. And we would kind of call the CP Center and stuff. So we showed it at the CP Center in Oakland. And everybody there went nuts. They all started standing up and cheering. And they started giving the workers at the center a hard time. You know, and afterwards, like, there was a discussion, and they were saying, yeah, my sister, you know, most of these people were less disabled than Frank, you know, and this is all their life, is going to this center every day.
Yeah.
And they're saying, you know, my sister won't let me go out on dates because she's afraid I'll get hurt, but I don't care. I want to get hurt. You know, I want to be out there.
Yeah.
And Frank was, the teacher wanted Frank to come back because she had never seen the group be so involved and so, you know, talking.
Uh-huh.
And we get a call saying that he's not invited back to the center, that it was too disruptive.
Oh, my God.
And that was
God.
It. They never showed that video again.
Really?
They never wanted to have anything to do with us.
That's something else.
They said that it was unrealistic and it was giving the people unrealistic hopes. Frank said, how do I know it's unrealistic? All the disabled people in that film are with women.
Mm-hmm.
They have relationships with non-disabled women, even. And the W.O., the women. Oh, and all the women in the video were in relationships with disabled men. So how did we know it's not realistic, you know?
Yeah.
But they didn't want to hear that.
So the administrators didn't want to hear it. Was it did you get a call from the administrators or the workers? Or?
Well, the teacher told us that the administrator had said,
yeah.
Who the administrator, and this is the really gross part of the story. The administrator was the guy that we said you remind us of, who had gone straight and decided that whole period of his life was an embarrassment, and now he's going to be like a straight, kind of straight guy in the disabled community. His ex-wife was the lead actor in the movie.
That's why. He's like, oh, my ex-wife. Oh, wow. That's heavy.
Yes, but don't you K-N, don't you know, C, Crips, R, W, H, I, white. Don't you know Crips are white?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Yeah.
How dare you be black?
Yeah. And that's all I got from the movement. When I was younger, it's like, okay, you're disabled, and that's it. You know, don't bring your race into the picture. You're just disabled. So yeah, it's weird when my parents got there when I was younger. They used to go to like parent support meetings, and you know. And they used to look around the room and it's like, I'm the only person of color. So, I think the disabled woman here in the U.S. needs to grow up and needs to, you know, look at issues of sexuality, race, you know, being disabled and gay, being disabled and a woman, yeah.
G. A. Gay. C. Crips. N. A. N. A. W. Nah. Great gay Crips. Nah. Oh, like that's not, they can't, he said gay Crips. Nah. Can't be.
What's that? You know what, have you heard about this magazine in San Francisco called Able Together?
Able Together.
Yeah, let me get this straight, it's a disabled gay men's magazine. And it comes out in San Francisco, but I think it's international. And when I saw it together, do a lot of research, I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. May, maybe, the, W, O, women, U, D, A, dated, S, A, saw, that, magazine, what do you mean, thought, maybe the women he dated saw that magazine?
And thought that I was, you know, it's strange, Frank, because my second time being published was in a black, gay female magazine. Wow. It's weird because I showed it to my sister and she's reading down, you know, the people that were in the magazine for that month, and all of them were women until she got to Leroy Moore, and stuck out like a short thumb, but they really support my work and publish it. While others, quote unquote, straight magazines or disabled magazines, wouldn't do it at that time. So.
So. How are the E-N English women different?
God, thank you for hitting me with all these hard questions. It's funny, I can't generalize all of them, but the ones that I met and were friends with, they were open. It's, you know, when I first met them, it's like, I didn't see that wall, which, you know, when you just say the word, when you're reading something new, you instantly see a wall that you ask the breakthrough to make that other person feel comfortable. But I didn't see that
what?
Wall.
What wall?
What wall? For me, meeting somebody new, especially when I was younger, I felt that I had to ease their feelings about this really so we can go on and have a friendship, you know? So that's the wall that I'm talking about. And in England, I didn't see that wall, you know? It's like, hey, here's Leroy, you know?
I did not want to be a B U R a burden in on G I on girls.
Girls, really? I didn't see myself being a burden. I saw. It's weird. I just saw that, you know, it's all their problem. They can't get over that fear, get over that wall, then I'm not doing anything wrong. It's their outlook of me. And it's hard work. It really is. It's hard work to make that person feel calm and cool. Sometimes I just want to say, forget it.
What? When? I? S? E? E? Seem? When I see you, I see a S E sexy H U hunk.
Me. Thank you. I hope all the women out there will hear that. Leroy's a sexy
hunk. He said he hopes all the women out there. Well, yeah, I definitely did. I mean, that's the way we described you to people. We said this really sexy guy, Leroy, who, like, knows he's sexy. That's the way we described you when we described you being on the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. FDS. So, they do, they are SLP. S-P-E, N, spending a lot of E, energy, K, E, keeping the wall up.
Mm-hmm. A lot of energy. And it's wasted.
And it's wasted, the energy. Yeah. And I think it ain't M-A-I-N mainly be because you are a crip, but they think you are to H O too hot for them.
You think so? I think it's weird because I think it's part of my disability, but that's only a small part. But I think the major part is that I grew up with a house full of women, and I'm a strong feminist, and it's strange because I don't want to say all, but the women I come in contact with, you know, they see that I don't view the world as like any other male. You know, I read a lot of women feminist authors. I read about a lot of homosexual authors. I read a lot of lesbian authors. I'm totally diverse, and I think some of them can't grasp that, you know. So.
To N I too nice.
Too nice.
They want assholes. They want an asshole.
I don't know.
Like L O Louise. Oh, Frank, Louise. Frank's friend Louise, she's, I don't know, she's in her late 60s now or something like that, but, she was, Frank met her when he was in college, and she was kind of the older hippie woman that had, like, mm-hmm. this, property with the guy she was with and their kids, and that's where kind of the students hung out, like, kind of the hip students hung out at her place, and that's, and she, when Frank was trying to get out of the house because he was ready to graduate and he saw that he had to do something or else he'd be like the crippled guy who lived with his mother his whole life.
Yeah.
And Louise said, why don't you just come live with me? I'm going to move to Santa Fe. And that's, but she was like really, I mean, she's an incredible person, very strong and smart and sexy and always has been. But Frank said she always was with asshole men. And he could never figure out why. And I think at a certain point in her life, as she got older, she realized that she didn't know why she did it either. But that's all. She kept being attracted to assholes. She, Kay, she knew guys, good guys. But she said they were never the ones she wanted to hook up with.
I guess opposite attracts, you know.
Opposites attract.
Because it's weird because I was going out with this young lady in England. She was from Romania, and here I am, a crazy black disabled American in England. I was you know I make friends easily, and I was going here, going there. I met this lady from Romania. She's completely the opposite. You know, she likes to stay in a little we worked at a college for students with disabilities. And she never mingled with other like teacher assistants. And she wasn't really out there. And it is like total opposite. You know, here I am, I'm out there, I'm doing whatever, and I was attracted to that. So I guess it's true, opposite attracts. Yeah. You know. Weird.
R, read some of your poetry.
I love some of my poetry. oh, what kind of stuff you want? I got it all kinds. Well, I like to read this one poetry. It's funny, the story behind my poetry is that I started reading my poetry in England, and they really loved it. I mean, they were like, more, more, more. And when when I came here, everybody was like, get off the stage, or, you know,
wow.
Scared, or...
Where were you reading here in the U.S.?
I first started out at this bookstore that I'm doing their monthly open mic called Modern Times Bookstore.
Modern Times, yes.
In the city. I really like that bookstore. I did some open mics there. I did some open mic around the city, like Paradise Lounge.
And they were the places that you were getting people weren't receptive?
It was 50-50. People didn't like it. People thought I was like really angry and I was pointing the finger and, you know,
Can A, I, ain't, P, O, poetry supposed to be angry?
Poetry is supposed to, it comes from here, where you feel. You know, it could be angry, it could be love poetry, it could be erotic, you know, it comes from here. And the people that says that, you know, my poetry is too offensive, or it's weird, because a couple of times I was censored. I couldn't believe that an open mic.
You were censored at an open mic?
Yeah.
And
like,
what happened?
Oh, I was, this was in Oakland, only a couple months ago. I was doing this poem called Brown, and it's a poem about Jerry and Willie Brown, the two mayors, mayors of Oakland, mayor of San Francisco. And I did this poem in Oakland, and they just, it's like, that's enough. Cut. It's like,
where was this that happened?
It's downtown Oakland. I don't want to say the cafe was downtown Oakland.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Jay? No. U. N. Unclear on the concept. They're unclear on the concept.
Yeah, totally. They just...
One of the people in the chat room, Jesse Beagle, who's already been saying, hey, how old is he? Then she said, just kidding. But anyway, she does hosts a poetry reading at Spazzo's, which is on College Avenue. Hey. And she wants you to do a reading at Spazzo's. She said, censored at an open mic. I want them.
Great. I am there. I'm all yours. Great.
Yeah. J. U. Just. W. A. Just wait until you. B. H, E, here, me, him, Jesse, and just Frank said, just wait till you hear him. You're really going to want him then. Okay.
All right. I'm going to do a poem that I first started out doing, and after I performed this poem, you know, before I go into it, it's weird. I was doing a lecture at Martin Times Bookstore, our first lecture about race and disability, and at the end, I wanted to throw some poems in there because I'm also a poet. And I was, during the week, I was questioning myself about doing this poem, and I showed it to my friend, Mitch Jesuits, which he's an excellent poet from Oakland. He's disabled too. He looked at the poem, he's like, Leroy, this is it, this is your first time out in the U.S., do this poem, I don't care if it doesn't go with your topic or if it's, you know, I like it, so do it. So that's the first time I've did it, and after that, it just took off. You know, everybody I see things like, do that poem again, do that poem again. So, here it goes. It's called If I Had a Gun.
Uh-oh.
Thank God I don't. Huh?
Oh, wait. And now for the C L O M M E R commercial, and now for the commercial G R E great having you. All right, and now for the commercial. Great having you on the show, Leroy. All right, here we go. Yeah.
If I had a gun. Oh, yeah. If I had a gun, I'll be doing life in a big house with a big smile on my face by now. Educate awareness. This is what people tell me as they stare at me. I've been a teacher for the public for years, but some, too many students need terror to grasp the lessons of my class. If I had a gun, it would be pointing at the racist, homophobic, sexist, and disability society I live in. Nobody will be left out. Although I'm a proud black disabled man, my gun will be pointing at both communities for leaving me on this picket fence. Don't compare me to Malcolm X or Huey Newton. I don't want people to follow me. Organized groups have to come to agreements for them to carry out their actions. No more talking our agreements. Just give me a gun. What would I do with a gun? I would increase the physically disabled population. Yeah. But at the same time, the general population would drastically decrease. Give me a gun that I need to carry like a gym bag over one shoulder. My gun would be so big and heavy that I need two hands to cock the motherfucker. There is no one target. Just put me in the city on lunch hour and I would let the bullets fly like arrows from a bow. Where would I start? Washington, D.C. Oh, yes, the capital of this country, Washington, D.C. Can you see me, a black disabled man, in the middle of the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate with my rainbow outfit on, toting a cannon-like gun to the temple of Newt Gingrich's forehead? Damn, I dream about it every night. No more double talks from these dirty rats we call our leaders. No more little kids games. He did it. I did not do that. You see, I don't care who started it all the rats had to be exterminated. I'm not Robin Hood or a superhero. Don't think I would give to the poor or Superman's charity. This is for three people. Me, myself, and I. Nobody else. This country taught me that I is the only person who cares about me. What a laugh. I would finally make the mainstream media as I spray my bullets around. ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CNN, BET, and yes, MTV. When I'm on the stand, I would tell my story and how I feel. I would look into the camera and say, it was a rotten job, but somebody had to do it. Yo, jury, you better put me in a chair to fry. If you, the jury, decide I'm crazy and need to be locked away in an institution, you are putting me in a cozy environment. These are the people I respect and will unite with to grab this fucking world and roll it like a bowling ball. While my so-called crazy partners and I wait to see if he wrote a strike. Everybody is demanding change. I can give you change if I had a gun.
Woo! Get my gun. That's one of Frank's favorite expressions. When something happens, he says, get me my gun.
It's weird. After I did that at Modern Times bookstore, everybody's like, oh, thank God he doesn't have a gun. Thank God.
We should M-A make A C T I O action movie. I will be your S.I. sidekick.
It's so funny because my stage name, I did a tape of spoken word last year, and my friend put it together. I did my poems, and he did all the music in the background, and I called it Black Disabled Man with a Big Mouth and a High IQ. So every open mic I open with that. He was like, oh, okay.
Your A, N, S, your answer, I, N, your answering, M, A, C, your answering machine. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will be back.
Yeah. that's a poem I wrote in England. It's I call it my revenge piece on the U.S. Yeah, because I was really mad with the U.S. So I wrote it there. I'll be back.
Like, will you, R, read?
Read that one?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Like I said, I wrote this in England. I was pissed off with the whole U.S. But that time, what, 95, and everything was going down, Prop 187, and, you know, graduating from college and not getting the job that I wanted, although I had like 12 years experience So, and this was going to disabled organizations. It just blew me away. So I wrote this in England. It's called I'll Be Back. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back. You might think you got rid of me now, but you just wait and see. I'll be back. Like a mouse in a science project, I follow the path you laid out. As they're going through the maze, you set up, I notice there's no cheese. The hell with you. It's time for me to break out of here. You told me I need this and that to make it in the world. My closet is packed with awards, degrees, recommendations, and resumes, but I'm not making it. As I walk into your office, your facial expressions tell me what's on your lips. Who is this crazy nigger doing in my office? It's okay, you won't listen to me now, because I'll be back with another piece of paper that I have to get to make you listen to me. This piece of paper is for me. You know very little about this piece of paper. But when I come back, it'll be your turn to swallow my education. You don't answer my letters or return my phone calls. Do you think you can hold me down forever? I know you inside out because I have to. You don't publish my writings. Why? Do they shake your utopian society up like an earthquake? Don't think I would take money to shut up when I come back. Like oil and water, I will spread fast. Smile in your face, work in your businesses, and behind your back, take over your institutions. In the morning, you'll be asking me for a job, money, knowledge, and my book on how to be successful. Knocking on doors and spreading the gospel like Mormons about your ways, and how you're stepping on us like ants will turn me into an uncontrollable army. My knowledge and big mouth will activate and energize people when I come back. By the time you realize that I need to be put to rest like you did Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, it'll be too late. All of this is going through my goddamn brain. As you slam your door in my face once again. I'll be back, I shout at your door. But you just sit there in your office with a smile. I'm also smiling, thinking about what's going to happen when I come back. And knowing that you don't have a clue about my plans. Oh yeah, I'll be back. Watch out. I'll be back. And I'm back. And I'm here.
Wow. Who are they?
Who are they in the poem? I think they mean the system. It's not anyone particular. It's just the system that we live in. The capitalist, racist, homophobic, disabled system that we live in. You know. And it could be from my experiencing going into like job interviews and seeing their face turn stone. It's like boom. Yeah.
Yeah. The K-I-T kitchen. Oh, when Okay, it's a performance space in New York City. It's called The Kitchen, and it's kind of like a well-known place.
Yeah, I think it has.
And Frank, well, let's see. Frank had performed at another well-known place. This is in the 80s, Franklin Furnace. And he performed there a couple of times, and the woman that was the director there, who was influential in the art world, said, you know, Frank, you need to come back to New York and play other places other than here. And he said, nobody else will book me. She said, let me put a word in with the people at The Kitchen, because I'll tell them they should book you. So they, you know, they would talk to us, and then they would chicken out, and they wouldn't book Frank. And so this went on for years. And then one of the people that had been a fellow student of Frank's at the San Francisco Art Institute when he was there for his master's, who hated Frank. When Frank went to the Art Institute, pretty much all the students and the teachers were so uptight about Frank that they wouldn't, when I would read his board, they would pretend he wasn't talking. And it was...
Clueless gum.
Fox. Well, we were pretty much determined, you know, we are not going to quit. And we hung out through that two-year period. In the last semester, Frank got his revenge. H-A-D had them, B-U-I had them build a R. They accepted Frank into the school, but it was totally non-accessible. So what would happen, but like he had to go up and down stairways to get to a class. And so for the first semester, we did that, and it would be me and other students that were drunk by the end of the class, carrying Frank up and down these flights of stairs. And it was scary, you know. It was definitely scary on after class. And these were people that hated him anyway, you know.
You put your life in.
So the second, and the president was like, "Oh yeah, Frank, we'll get it rammed." Just kind of placating us, figuring we'd just go through the 2 years and they'd never do anything.
Uh-huh.
So the second semester, we show up for the first day of class, and Frank says, "This is the last day I'm coming until there's a ramp." So they built a ramp just for Frank that second semester. And so anyway, the last semester they had a guest teacher who was the publisher of this big performance art magazine. And she came right up to Frank. She could see he was the one, you know, and she loved us, became our friend, and invited all these famous artists to our house to meet Frank over
no
the semester.
Way.
And she put him on the cover of her magazine. And it's like they all were like, the teachers and the students were like so green with envy, and how did he get her to do that, you know? So, hey, Mikey, Mike problems. So anyway, this guy that was one of the students that hated Frank, afterwards got a job at The Kitchen as the director of their video thing, their video department or something, and he arranged to have Frank show one of his videos. It was a feature-length video. So, Out of Isolation. It's a video about a guy who's disabled, played by Frank, who is institutionalized his whole life. Because when Frank was born, the doctors told his parents that he should be institutionalized because he had no future. And his parents said that they could see something in his eyes that didn't ring true with what the doctors were saying. So they kind of fought that his whole life. So he grew up kind of knowing that it could have gone that way. Yeah. So he writes this
same
piece.
Here. Doctors told my mother.
So... did you hear he said that the same thing happened with him? The doctors told his mother
that,
too.
I think doctors are clueless when it comes to disability.
Yes.
And he does. I mean, what's something to say about, you know, your mother? Hey, you just had a baby boy or girl. What? It'll be better than an institution. I mean, come on. Clueless.
So the video was about this guy that was institutionalized his whole life, and everybody treated him as if he didn't know what was going on. And he's an adult now, and he kind of went along with that because in the piece it says, you know, because that world is so unattractive to him that he just kind of has his own, like, little inner world.
Yeah.
But it's about the relationship that forms between him and one of the kind of young, good-looking female physical therapist who is more vulnerable than the normal nurses. And they develop a relationship that turns into a physical relationship. And then she freaks out thinking, I can't do this. This isn't professional. Mm-hmm. And the final scene is Frank's character, who has nothing to lose, just totally freaking out and screaming and yelling until she just kind of falls down on the bed and starts crying. And then it ends with them again, like, physically playing nude. And this was the video that they booked Frank Dish to premiere at this place, The Kitchen. It's like a big deal, you know, to premiere your video
yeah,
at this place.
Big time.
So what happens is the people at The Kitchen, when they find out that this guy has booked Frank, even though it was just for a video, they freaked out. And they wanted this guy to send Frank a contract, their performance contract, making Frank promise he wouldn't do anything that would offend anybody.
Oh, Jesus.
They were
Christ,
so nervous.
No way. Oh.
Yeah.
That's something else.
But when I got to New York, when we saw the flyer, when we saw the their kind of schedule that they send out of events for the season, and when it had the description of Frank's video, and even though it was Frank had sent them a lot of press and descriptions of it, what they wrote is that it's this disabled man talking about what it's like to be disabled, which isn't the description. He says it's a video about need and breaking out of isolation. Because in the video, it's the woman who turns out to be the more isolated that breaks out of it through her relationship with Frank's character. So what you did? Okay, so we get there, and it's like, you know, everybody's real nervous at The Kitchen that Frank is going to, like, do something.
Go, please don't
They're saying, so you're not performing, right? You're just showing the video. You know, they're like this. So we come in, and there's, like, this crowd, and it's all, like, very kind of, you know, like, oh, you know, like this, all proper and highbrow and stuff.
New York.
Yeah. So we, Frank, you know, we go to the front before the video, and Frank says, well, I am I must be a really bad actor. This is Frank's introduction to the piece. I I saw the description that was mailed out about this video, and it's not at all what the video is about. It is about a mixed R race relationship. That's what he says. It's about a mixed and interracial relationship. But I could not get any black actors to play the male lead in. They did not want to make love with a white woman on film.
Really?
Well, this is what he's telling the audience. This is what he's telling them. He said, so I play the nigger in the video.
Oh my God, no.
Boy, did that place get quiet.
Oh, I can't be. like, and both of me flying. Oh my God.
So tense. Every, before I, before the N, I, the nigger part, mm-hmm. They were
with him. You know, yeah. He was like the cute yeah. crip, yeah, and they were kind of following him along. Yeah, everything was, oh, isn't that nice? Oh, yeah.
I hear you. I think it's weird. I think when I get pissed, and because I talk to my friends a lot, and they say the same thing when disabled people get mad and pissed off. Oh, people, like, that's the only time that they really listen. You know, it's the only time that they really listen. And it's so true. You know, I can be talking like I'm talking with you. You know, it goes like over their heads. But when I get pissed off and call them motherfucker, and then it's like, oh, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Mikey, what's this? Jesse's already trying to line you up with a date.
Hi, Jesse.
She wants you bad. Okay, after we go off the air, tell Jesse we can work it out in the chat room with her. Is that okay with? Yeah. Okay.
Great. All right. Great. God. I'm gonna come over here in my office. Like 12 years, no day. I come over to Frank's one time. I get a date.
I get results.
I guess so. Have to move in. Yeah. I like to plug as I can. Event that we're doing. I'm also an organizer, and I have my own organization called.
And he'll zoom in on it. Yeah. So if you check out the Chero Cam, you'll be able to see a poster in a few minutes.
Okay. Yes, I'm also a founder of a new organization that started last year called Disability Advocates of Minorities Organization. Mm-hmm. So it's for disabled people of color, and the flyer that you're gonna see soon is an event that we're hosting with collaboration with I think the name is I forgot the name of the other group that's collaborating with us. But anyway, yeah, the name is 777. It was Carmen 777 and Damo, and we're presenting.
Like there it is. You see what it looks like.
Oh, wow, crazy. What we're presenting is a night called Street Integration, where we put together a handful of street artists straight from the streets. We have Charles T. He's a blues singer. You can see him every day at Market and Pile. He does the blues. And we have the crazy feet of Edward Jackson. He's a tap dancer. He's wicked. I mean, this man can dance his butt off. And we have Marcos Average from the Mission District in the city, and he does his music. He's blind, and he does I think Mexican music. He has a guitar, and he sings And he's going to be there. He's really good. Really slamming good. And we have a revolutionary poet called Cordelia Brown. She speaks the truth. And I think Aretha Franklin gave birth to this next artist. Her name is Tom Lewis. She lives right here in Oakland. And she's a wonderful singer, poet, singer, actor. She's incredible. Anyway, the day is on December 12th. That's, what, next Sunday. So next Sunday at La Pina Cultural Center, 3105 Shattuck Avenue. Admission is free, and the night is going to be slamming.
What time does it start?
7 o'clock p.m.
Okay.
Poets, singers, we're going to have people from, I think from Fisherman's Wharf, they sell handmade sweaters and hats and everything. It's going to be good.
So yes.
People out there, please come.
Yes. Did give us that their, oh, their numbers. Give us the phone numbers of the people you have performing.
I will. Yeah. I will. Yeah. I will. Right now, I don't have all their phone numbers, but if you want to get in contact with them, you can call Moa.
Uh-huh. We'll call them and get the numbers from them. Yeah. Yes. U S A. You said C R I Crip. Crips are N I G niggers in the B L A black in the black C O M M community.
You know, it's weird when you say that because I have a poem that's called NWD. And when I did this poem, in Berkeley, at a lovely cafe that I always go to. They have open mic, Capra Cafe on Shattuck. And I was featured at an open mic there, I think, this summer, and I did a poem called NWD, and that NWD called it stands for nigger with disability. And after I performed that poem, it's weird that poem got the most applause than any other of my poems that I did that night. And of course, I was scared to do it because it's so straightforward, but people like it.
Maybe. Would you read it?
Yeah. If I can find it. Now, this poem I'm going to do at Street Integration, but it's going to be mixed. It's going to be mixed with other poems that I wrote. Mitch Jesuit Schmidt. Mitch is the guy that organized the integration, and he edits NWD to present more of my stuff in one poem. So you'll hear that next Sunday if you come to share La Pina.
P L plug. Away.
NWD. And I think if people out there know about rap music, they will understand this poem more. Because it's a takeoff from a group, a rap group called N.W.A. and the rap group was called Niggers with Attitudes. So I took it from there. Okay, N.W.D. This goes out to all the hardcore hip-hop lovers in the house. Remember N.W.A.? Niggers with Attitudes? Well, N.W.D. is going to take it to the next altitude. Yeah, yeah, hell yeah. Nigga with disability, N.W.D. looking straight at you. N.W.D. got a big fat attitude. N.W.D. is taking over. And I'm a fighter, not a lover. Nigga with disability got a big mouth. N.W.D. on the mic. What you don't like? N.W.D. don't give a fuck what you like. Nigga with disability got a high IQ and he's schooling you. Yeah, hell yeah. Fuck Christopher Reeves. Handyman can't handle me. Clear the stage. Here comes N.W.D. No one can touch me. Sit down. You can't hang with N.W.D. Nigga with disability in your way. N.W.D. on tour. Your mouth hits the floor. N.W.D. raw to the core. Who's next? Nigga with disability got a gun. Watch out. Here comes N.W.D. Pop, pop, boom, boom. N.W.D. is in town. N.W.D. with the ladies getting down. Don't fuck with N.W.D. Don't stare at N.W.D. Don't turn your back on N.W.D. Nigga with disability got knowledge. Fuck a B.A. N.W.D. kicking your B.A. I mean your black ass. N.W.D. got you running. Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader, bring it on. Nigga with disability got the force. N.W.D. shaking Mother Earth, earthquake, tornado, 20 below zero. N.W.D. fucking with Mother Nature. ABC, NBC, Fox, CNN, MTV, and BET all on N.W.D. Fuck Oprah. N.W.D. taking over the media. Where is he? N.W.D. in D.C. on Broadway and on Paris runways. Nigga with disability is the authority. N.W.D. taking out Uncle Tom and Uncle Sam. Cutting the bullshit and preaching his mind. Kicking politicians in the behind. N.W.D. too heavy for yuppies and bumpies. Ladies can't handle N.W.D. S&M is nothing but a game for N.W.D. Nigga with disability got a funky attitude. And you don't like? But you ain't nothing but a squirrel in my world. Trying to get my disabled chocolate nuts. N.W.D. got BSWD, Black Sister, with disability. And yeah, we are getting busy, making you dizzy. But you don't like? Go fly a fucking kite. Cause N.W.D. is on the mic. And I don't give a fuck what you like. N.W.D.
Yeah. A. No, S. A.S. as he, A. as he S, M. I. as he smiles, S. E. S. sweetly, as he smiles sweetly. That's right.
I'm innocent. Vote for me, president. That's why people are shocked when they first hear my stuff. They're like, it's a total different leeway, one that I know.
If you were in high school, they would expel you
for that poem.
For that poem, and where is my gun? That poem, and where is my gun?
Yeah. Definitely not.
Oh, you mean in these? Oh, right. He's commenting on the state of affairs currently in high schools.
Oh,
the way
yeah.
just kind
oh,
of
yeah.
talking like that yeah. would get you expelled.
Definitely.
Yes.
You know, it's weird because after the incident in Colorado, the high school there. I was at an open mic and everybody's like, "Oh, do the gun poem, do the gun poem." I was like, "No, it's too soon, because that was like about 2 weeks after the shooting." I was like, "No, can't do it."
He said when he was doing an open mic, it was like a couple of weeks after the shooting had happened in Colorado, and somebody said, "Do the gun poem." And he said, no, he thinks it's too soon to do that poem.
Yeah. Right. I think if you explain your work before you get into it, then you lay out, the framework of your work, then people can understand it. Especially today.
But kids need the freedom to express themselves. Mm-hmm. That's being taken away from them now.
Definitely. And I think the kids, the youth, have the answers. And I think after the shooting at the high school, we saw once again the adults taking this issue from the kids and trying to answer it themselves without having the youth be involved. It's sad because we don't really listen to our youth.
And the S T R E Street M musicians, the street musicians are getting kicked off of the streets. We've had a few different street musicians as guests here on the show, and people that have been playing like around Haight Street and different parts of San Francisco for years, and they're saying all of a sudden it's not okay. The cops are hassling them, and the shop owners are calling the cops if they're in front of their store.
Yeah.
And it's not an environment where they're welcome anymore. Whereas in the past, it would be like the feeling was more like, oh, this is cool. It will get, people will come around to listen to you and they'll come into my store. And it was just a more friendly environment.
I think that's one reason that Mitch and I put together street integration, because we are recognizing that, even our culture, our way of speaking, our music, our performing arts are getting, privatized. It's like, if you're not quote-unquote politically correct, or you're not connected to some, you know, institution or higher learning, then your culture, your artwork is not respected. And street integration is like breaking all kind of boundaries because we're getting talented people that really have something to say. They really are shaking the foundation of this corporate takeover of the U.S. Yeah. Anyway, what's so strange is that the youth like it. And the youth are coming out to see it. You know, it's like, you know, we're doing something right when the youth are connected to it, you know. It's quite sad when they kick street performers out, you know. You have the license. You have the other license to do your artwork, you know.
I was be a band from
C-I-L.
Oh, C-I-L. Oh, an event. This was like, what, like maybe the early 90s, late 80s or something. Mm-hmm. And Mike again, mic issues. Yes. They were putting on, CIL was putting on an event that had to do with eroticism and sensuality and sexuality in art.
CIL?
Yes. And yes. And
like
so
they know about it.
And so they got this guy, Bruce, who was a disabled dancer, to do it for them. And they told him that he had complete artistic freedom. He could pick whoever he wanted to be part of this event. And so, Frank, you know, we have heard over the years that the disabled community recognizes that Frank has been doing art as like a person, not as a disabled person,
yeah,
way before, you know, like since the early 70s, mm-hmm, before they, and this is like to take the words from one disabled artist that said to us off camera when she was interviewing Frank for a show. On camera, she only gave Frank a hard time. Off camera, she said, I recognize that you were doing art before any of us could imagine ourselves doing anything like that. She said, that doesn't mean I have to like you or like what you're doing, but I recognize that that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, this guy that was, you know, hired by CIL to put this event on contacted us. He came to one of Frank's all-night performances, and he said, it seems to me that you should be one of the performers because you're the one that kind of started it all.
Yeah.
And he said, they did tell me I have complete freedom. He said, but you're such a hot issue. I just want to run it by them and make sure. And sure enough, he called us back. He said, there is no way I can book you. No way. He said, they just won't go for it.
Yeah. It's.
He danced. Yeah, Frank had him do a nude dance at one of Frank's all-night performances, which he said was like the highlight of his artistic, you know, life was doing, because he said he'd always wanted to dance nude.
Uh-huh.
And so Frank said, well, do it at my performance. He did this incredible nude dance. Yeah.
Cool.
You know, we might get a lot of calls from this statement, but I think the so-called disabled movement, if you can call it a movement, is dead. I mean, there's just gorgeous people out there doing good work like you and me and other people, that our organization have become so elitist and so mainstreamers, it's like they don't represent the community, and they're so disconnected from the community that they don't even know about the community.
A. Yes. When you see A, when you called that them, when you called them, when Leroy, no, when I, no, when they, when they, no, when, let's see, is it when I, when they,
CIL,
when CIL, no, when you, C-A, call, C-I-L, W, with a question or a problem, they are just, they are just like S-S-I, yeah.
Yeah. Bureaucracy.
A bureaucracy. Yeah.
Nothing but red tape.
Yes. N. E. Never. H. E. They never help. Yeah. There's only been a couple of, maybe three times where we thought, well, gee, you know, this is something that they should be able to answer this question. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh, man. It was just like get messages and, you know, shifting to, oh, this person deals with that, this person. And they never gave us an answer.
It's funny. My last day there, check what I did, Frank. The last day at CIL, I put a copy of If I Had a Gun in everybody's mailbox. And I'm like, God, it shook their foundation for a month. I mean, they kept on talking about that. It's like, they're so clueless and so disconnected. That's another reason why I started the organization that I'm working with now, because I think the movement, if you can call it a movement, I call it a click. That it needs to get back to the grassroots. And I'm finding out that at the click or the movement have no clue about the grassroots. They have no clue about how to do things in the community. We get calls from IELs asking us, how do you put on a performance like these, or how do you, we had a performance at the Oakland Asian Cultural Center a couple of days ago. Like, how do you do that? And this is coming from an organization that's been around since, what, the 70s? I mean, we just started last year. I mean, hello. You go to the place and you say, you know, that's serious. And what's really depressing and upset is that the youth are like hungry for what we're doing, and you get organizations like IELTS that are not really doing anything aggressive or stealing for youth. So it's like, oh, it just gets to me. And we're doing this with no money.
Right. We always do everything with no money.
You know?
Yes.
These organizations get
big bucks. They got all this money. Right.
And not doing jack with it.
Right. That is their problem. They are B U
busy getting money.
Yeah.
Doing their grants and getting money.
Somebody has to tell the funders what's really up, you know. Because I worked at the youth department, and it's just, I mean, to serve Oakland and Berkeley and almost all over the East Bay, and to have only a small youth department, that's, and I think, don't quote me on this, but I think it's the only youth department, and I think there's only two independent living centers that have a youth department in California. So if I'm right, and this is the only institution that gives us incredible.
Have they HEA heard of the BLA Black P Panthers? Or any RA radical or any radical organization or group? Who's the they when you say have they heard? CIL?
You know, it's weird because they say, and it's well documented that during the 504 protests, I wasn't there, but
Frank slept in at the federal building during that period. Yes.
They said that the Black Panthers deliver food.
Yes.
And every time they say that, every time I hear about that, it's like, so we're good servants, huh? You know, we can deliver food. I guess that's all we can do in the movement. It's just, you know. Because it's weird, because I saw the 504 birthday. I guess they have a video called the 504 or something. And after looking at that video, I realized it's like there's no people of color that really have a section in that video. You know, if you really look at it, there's only Caucasian disabled people that are on the mic, and there's only like a small little section where you see disabled people of color, you know, in that video. So, you know, I think the organization that I helped started way overdue.
That was the I, no, the O, only thing, time, I was S, U, C, sucked in to the disabled community during that 504 thing. I went there, J, just to P, I picket, like one day. But I ended up going inside and because I M. Have a church. Frank has a church.
Yeah.
He was able to go in and out. Most of the people, when you were when once you went in, you weren't allowed to leave. Yeah. But because he had the church, he was allowed to go in and out. I P R I N printed up a C a card that said you were part of a church so that he could go in and out. S so I W E I went A around getting M O money for the people that were sitting in, I guess, yeah. Getting donations for that.
Like food and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what the video showed.
But after that, they stopped. They STI still didn't want to have anything to do with Frank.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it. I mean, it's so. I think you just need to start all over again. You know, because I think the disabled woman just skipped about grassroots and just went to institutional way of thinking. I mean, they start their institutions and they're gradually going up. You know, you see a couple of people in Washington. You know, it becomes so elitist so quick. And I was like, how can it becomes so elitist when you have, you know, so many disabled people in poverty, and, you know, you have so many disabled people that don't even know about the ADA, and it's funny, I was in one meeting in Berkeley, and they were discussing how to celebrate the ADA in the year 2000, and of course, me being radical, raise my hands like, there's no sense to celebrate. I don't see a reason to celebrate. And everybody's like, E.F. Hutton is like, click, you know, what did Leroy say? Here's the leaders of the movement, CIM, when talking about how to celebrate the 88th birthday in the year 2000. And we got people that are homeless, unemployed, they're disabled children in foster care, you know. I found out a couple of weeks ago that people with mental illness in L.A. have been getting shot by the LAPD. I mean, the L.A. Times said, since, what, 1994, that 35 people with mental illness was shot by the LAPD in 25 of them dead. I mean, all of this, and we're going to celebrate the ADA in the year 2000. I mean, we have so much work to do. It's incredible. I mean, real work that I think the real work hasn't begun yet. So. Preaching now, but it just gets to me.
R-U-H-I-H-O-P. Hopeful? Are you hopeful?
Yeah, I am. The youth that I see, because the demo goes into schools, And they used to see it after we do a presentation about the real, the real history and the real culture about disability, about, you know, disabled people of all cultures and, you know, backgrounds. The students was like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, I didn't know that, you know, tape kindergartens have a disability. I didn't know that. I didn't know about Frida Kahlo, you know? Things like that are, although we have disability studies now, I don't think it's really taught in a progressive way. Yeah. So once we go into a classroom, I feel a sense of hope because those students are hungry for it. They want it. And after they get it, they feel like, you know, I do have a history. I do have, you know.
But we, they, then, they are D-A-N dangerous. They become dangerous then.
They become dangerous
to the system, if they're looking at things like that.
That's good, though. That's good. That's good because it makes the system think.
Like when F fairy tales, right? Like when we showed fairy tales at the CIL, and then all of the people become, they're perceived as being dangerous for thinking that they can have a life.
I think that's good. I think that's good. Because it makes them think. Yeah.
F. A. Fairy tales. Did. Not. S. Sell. Yeah, that's what happened. Eventually the distributor stopped distributing it because even though they were blown out by it, they said the people that actually are the ones that do the booking are the same kind of mindset as the people at that center, that CP center, and they think it's unrealistic, so they don't want to show it.
Yeah, amen. It's weird. That's why, when I first started to try to get my stuff published, I went to small magazines, progressive magazines, you know, other communities that could share, where I'm coming from, like the Black gay community or, you know, the Black feminist community. I didn't start off, you know, in the New York Times because I knew my shit would never ever. Be in there because it's too straightforward. But it's so hard to find that avenue where you could, you know, blossom and grow. I think there's an avenue. I think now, really now, because spoken word and art is becoming really popular in the streets, you know.
Yes.
It's not an academic quote-unquote thing. And I think that's where to start.
F. U. Funny. I. G. O. I got. A. C. A. L, a call for S-U-B-M, submissions. You did get an email today from one of those organizations, the one that had asked you to write something, not the first one, I think it was the second one, is that... Does that make sense?
Yes, you got an email from them today. But the first one, yeah, it was a disabled thing, and they were a call for submissions for Frank to write something. And the A-S-C-H school L A R scholarly B book on disability for and P E R and performance, a scholarly book about disability and performance.
Yeah.
And the K I N, the kind of thing they that are E A really P R O M promotes S T E R stereotypes W H I while S A while saying they are E X experimental A E X P L exploring now O D, exploding. While saying they're exploding stereotypes, they're really promoting stereotypes. Can C R I can Crips ever R E A really? J, U, just, L, O, no, P, E, R, perform. That was them. One of the questions is, can Crips ever really just perform?
I think now, it is weird because I think Hollywood has been like, boom, on disability. I mean, recently there's so many movies that have come out from the disabled standpoint, although many actors aren't disabled, but now you see movies that are really coming out, like, have you seen The Bone Collector yet?
The Bone Collector, no.
No. Oh, my God. I saw it a couple weeks ago with Denzel Washington, and he becomes a quadriplegic, you know. And I couldn't believe it was out there because I do a lot of research on recent disability, and it's like, oh my God, a black man in a disabled role, a main movie. Like, finally I can see myself on the screen. But I think it's coming out constantly. There's this new movie called Flawless.
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
So, I think the next stage is like, okay, Hollywood, you're learning. But the next day he says, let us do those roles. You know, don't get demons of Washington to play a quadriplegic.
I, W, A, L, I walked, O, out, on, A, F, I, film, D, E, deal. Oh, is this with Elliot? When we were doing that show, The Outrageous Beauty Review, this producer type guy shows up and he says to Frank, I would like to produce a movie that you would create, whatever you come up with, because I think the show is great. Mm-hmm. And Frank says to him, okay, well, but my only requirement is that I direct it. No, no problem.
That's the only
one. No problem, Frank.
You hate Hans.
Yeah. So we spend a year with this guy. It's all kind of, you know, big shot stuff, like, you know, flying us to LA for auditions, and he hires a script writer who lives up in the Marin Hills next to Van Morrison, you know.
Jesus,
and it's just all kind of very glamorous and everything. We get an actress in L.A. and, you know, all that. And he says, okay, now it's time for me to go and get the money. So he takes his little trip to Florida. C-A-C-A-S-T casting in a M movie M-O Motel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that wasn't with Elliot, was it? He did have a space where people came to. We rented a big space for the audition. Yeah.
In the motel.
But then there was another time when we did stuff in a motel, too, where people would come to our motel room. That kind of cracked us up. But then, so he goes and he comes back from his big money trip in Florida, and we meet in this Ocoee, this coffee house, and he says, okay, Frank, we got the money, like lots of money, you know.
Yeah.
And so we're ready to go. And he said, but, you know, the only thing is, of course, they're not going to give all this money to have you direct, you know, because who are you? They don't know you. And Frank said, well, and then, you know, the deal's off, because that was my only requirement. And he could not believe that Frank would walk out on this big money deal now. And he flipped out. He just started screaming and yelling and stormed out of the restaurant. We got a letter from his lawyer like the next day saying that Frank couldn't use any of the ideas that he had written, you know, because it was happened in conjunction with this guy. And it was based on that we spent the $300 and made it ourselves. You know, that's how we made Fairy Tales, as a kind of reaction to that.
That's rare.
Yes.
That's rare, especially in the U.S. That's like turned down. And in this day, you say up front with the principals, that's rare.
Especially that's rare, and especially in the U.S., for someone to turn down money and to have principals. That is what, when, where, L, U, lover came from. This radio station came as a result of Frank had a show on another internet radio station called Fake Radio. And when we had started, their whole thing was we're a free speech radio station, and Frank had been kind of was known for being like a free speech. He was investigated by Jesse Helms during that period.
Oh, fucking Jesse Helms.
Yeah, in the early 90s as an obscene artist. So they were kind of real happy to have Frank on board. And shortly into it, we found out that it was free speech. What they meant by free speech is that you could say fucking shit. But that there were things you couldn't say. Like, you weren't allowed to talk about, like, policy. You weren't allowed. There were a lot of things you couldn't say. And, of course, Frank, you know, immediately finds them and starts saying them all, you know, without trying. And, So, you know, we eventually decided that we were going to just start our own radio station, and that's how we did this.
You know, that's America for you. Yeah, everything is cool. Free speech, welcome to America. But you can't do that. It's like...
And I could be... I could be rich if I P.L. played the game, played the N, I, the nice Crip.
Mm-hmm.
With her, and down the road, you know, it turned out that what she wanted was Frank the Nice Crip,
yeah.
You know, like the yeah. kind of poster boy.
Yeah.
And when Frank wouldn't do that, and she was, you know, she was very influential, and Frank could have, like, you know, been way up there in the art scene if he would have just played along. But, you know, I mean, there's no way, you know. So she freaked out at a certain point and, you know, wouldn't... You know, just kind of told him he was exploiting his body, and why should people have to look at his body when they, if they have to deal with nudity, do they have to look at him? And he's, yeah.
Oh my God.
He just went on and on and on and on.
It's weird because when I came back from England, I was like a changed man. Like, I stopped. Before I went to England, I was everywhere, you know, volunteering here, working there, UCP, you know, ILs. I was outspoken too. But when I came back from England, I cut like everything in there. That's like zip, and everybody's like, "What's wrong with Leroy?" And when I did my poetry, it's like, God, this man has gone crazy, you know? This man, he's a volunteer, he's a nice guy.
Not M, not N, nice, not a nice Crip anymore.
No. You know, I think what they mean by nice, because I keep on saying, yeah, I'm not a nice guy, I'm still a nice guy. I'm still a nice guy. For all you ladies out there, I'm still a nice guy. But I think what they mean by nice is, you know, stay with the program. Don't speak your mind. You know, don't rock the boat. And I was tipping the boat over when I came back. I was like,
the F I the first time I H E heard that I heard that was in high school when you wrote that piece? No, I don't know. In high school, they wanted me to be a M.O. a model. Frank was in one of the first or the first class where they were integrating disabled people non-disabled students in the school system.
You were the guinea pig.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Frank was, you know, the smart kid.
Uh-huh.
And so they wanted him to be the model so that this program would be accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And
But Frank, you know, was radical. And so he would say all this radical stuff and write radical papers. And they said that you're going to jeopardize this whole program by doing this. And don't you care about that? My teacher, got mad at you, really laid into him.
Yeah.
For not kind of being a better representative. Yes, for not conforming. Yes. Vietnam and civil rights. They're the kinds of things Frank was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Big time radical.
But I figured, he said that to him, it seems like if this is all about having disabled people have their rights and be human beings, it seems to him that what he's doing is the way to go about that, rather than kind of just conforming and being unreal. Isn't this the way to win rights for people, is to stand up for my rights and to, you know, say what I believe and what I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because the co-founder of Disability Advocates of Minorities Organization, Gary Gray, he wrote a poem, and his poem is called Conform. He talks about how people conform and how he was forced to conform. Like he's a radical, like you and me. But it is interesting how you bring that up for me. I think that's happening like everywhere, you know, in the arts, in the schools, and institutions. You know, if you act a certain way, then you're considered out there. You conform. I think that's another reason why I quit CIL and I started this, because I was like, I've been over here, and I know what it's like, you know, like, so I'm not gonna go back over there and stay there. So let's try over here. It's been working out great. I mean. People like what we do. We're interesting. We're hitting topics that I don't think any traditional disability organization is hitting. So it's a great thing.
Where can people contact you? How can people contact you?
Oh, people can contact me. We have an office in Oakland, although we're there only once a week because DMO is more grassroots. I don't like offices. I like to get out in the community, you know. So we're in the office only once a week, and that's in Oakland on 14th Street, I think. Yeah, 436 14th Street.
436 14th.
Yeah.
Is there a place like people can write to you or call or something?
We have a P.O. box number, and the P.O. box is DAMO. It's D-A-M-O.
D-A-M-O.
Yeah. P.O. Box 31024.
31024.
And that's Oakland, California, 94604.
And it's DAMO, D-A-M-O.
Yeah. And you can call me, Leroy, at,
we have that. But mm-hmm. Go ahead, yeah.
31024.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the phone number, 1-900. Oh, no. that's like personal phone number. You can't call that. My phone number is error code 415 695-0153. That's in the city, and if you're here in the East Bay, Gary Gregg's phone number is, I hope I have it. Let me see, I know it's 510. I should know his phone number by heart. I call it every day. He gets the East Bay calls and I get the San Francisco calls. Yeah. 510-234-5278. Yeah. And we also have a group of what we call New Voices. In New Voices is disabled poets and artists of color. And we've been together off and on for a year. It started out last February. Me and Gary Gregg decided, you know, how can we celebrate Black History Month and get our voice in there? So we decided to call our friends that are African American and disabled, Lee Williams and Alf Kaboom and me and Gary Gregg had an event at Different Light Bookstore. No, not Different Light Bookstore, Modern Times Bookstore in the city. And we called it New Voices Black, New Voices Black History Month. And we did our poetry. I talked about Black disabled history. Me and Gary talked about DAMO. And every event that we do, we videotape it. So we have an extensive video archive.
Maybe. When, where, you know, when we have the video thing hooked up, we're gonna, Frank's gonna start a show that is a video show where we show tapes from other people. So maybe we can get copies of some of your tapes to show.
Yeah. We do that. We videotape our events and we also have a talk show that comes on once a month at BCM, Berkeley Community. Media on cable.
Yes.
25.
They also have a talk show on the on BTV that comes on once a month.
And we,
they have
and
a
we
tape
keep,
of that.
Yeah, we keep the videos. So
yes.
Right now, that's one big project that hopefully in the future I'll be working on is try to edit all those videos. We have, I think, about 7 of them. So we're trying to edit all the videos and have one video of New Voices DAMO, our talk show, on one tape so we can advertise that way.
Want a L lover? Do you want a lover show?
A lover show.
A show on lover.
Mm. That sounds good. Yeah, we can do a show on lover. Yeah.
It would be where we would play
like we, you could get us, you could give us copies of the tapes, uh-huh, and we would play them here, so you wouldn't have to have a computer.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you'd have a regular show, whatever you wanted to call it, whatever you wanted it to be, and you would just give us tapes, audio or video, mm-hmm, whichever you want, and we would play them on a weekly basis or however often you want your show to be.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can go for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. F R free freedom. Yeah, you have, it's like your show, so anything you want to do, like we don't have anything to say about that. All that you do is just make sure we have a tape for your show, however often you want to do it.
That's, yeah. Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'm there. I'm there.
All right. So everybody check the schedule out. When we nail it down, it'll be on the schedule.
That's right.
R, read one last poem.
One last poem.
Is that what you were going to say? Yes.
Go
ahead. Before I... K. I'll kick you out.
Yeah, okay. Okay. You want to kick me out? Which one should I read? I think I'll read something erotic.
So going to read something erotic.
Is that okay with you?
You bet.
Uh-huh. I can find it. Erotic for all the ladies out there. It's called So Soft. I wrote this poem. My sister can relate because she came into town. She's from New York, and she recently moved here. She was traveling in Mexico. And she recently moved here. And of course, the second day she's in town, I find myself in the heat doing a photo op with this young lady that sees erotic stripper. So I was like, what the hell am I doing? Oh, God. So I was in my sister's control, and one thing led to another. It's like, oh God. So I wrote this poem about that moment. It's called So Soft. Oh, so soft. Nice and smooth. Can I touch you? Yeah, so soft and warm, gentle and sweet. Can I cuddle with you? Ooh, feels so good, hot and wet. Can I stay here tonight? So soft and tender, juicy and tasty. Can I have a bite? Ah, candles so soft, cool and sexy. Can I play with you? Eee, so soft in there, gooey and sticky. Can I go down? Ah, 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 bumping and grinding. Can I do it like this? Oof, so soft, big and fluffy. Can I squeeze it? So goddamn soft, hard and stiff. Can I rock you? Wee, so deep, tight and rough. Can I straddle you? Oh, Jesus, so soft but firm. Erotic and raw. Can I video you? Wow, so soft and comfortable. Round and boomy. Can I go deeper? Boo, so soft and powerful, strong and sturdy. Can I plug it in? Oh, yeah. Ooh, oof, wee, oh, Jesus. Wow, woo, sweating and creaming. Please, 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 can we do it again? That's a good one.
That's a good one.
To end on the show.
On the mic. Yes.
Thank you, Frank, for having me on. This has been great. This has been great.
S I S Sisters with Gaps are coming over on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And we're going to videotape their show.
Oh, good, good. Yes. Tell them I say hello.
Yes. Good. So it's been Leroy Moore. And check the schedule and soon for and his brother Frank separated at birth. We think maybe they had different fathers. They're twins, though.
Yeah, look figure it.
Two sexy guys. Check the schedule for Leroy's upcoming lover show. And so we're going to play some music now. Here's some music. That was so funny.